Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to the End Credits Radio Show here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I'm your host, Adam A. Donaldson, and joining me today is...
Peter Wesley Salmon.
Peter. People often confuse us as doppelgangers, am I right?
We got some tendencies, we got some similarities.
Well, tendencies are going to be a big part of today's show, and we will explain why in a minute. End Credits is a local movie show for local movie fans. We are here every Wednesday at 2 p.m. to talk the latest in pop culture and review the newest movies, which this week will be the new Double Your Will Smith, Double Your Pleasure action pick, Gemini Man. That is in the back half of the show. For the first half, we're going to talk about some of the latest movie news from the past week, including a Joker sequel? It was supposed to be a one-off, but money talks. It's talking about a follow-up, and is that a good idea? And then... Peter will get his chance to share his top five for 1999, though he was probably too young to see any of his choices in theaters.
Yeah, I saw a lot of films in theaters, but yeah, some of my choices, definitely not. But Stuart Little, that stuff, oh yeah.
I'll be very interested to see if that's on your list. But first, why is everyone hating on the Marvel Cinematic Universe? And there's been a lot of, shall we say, talk in the last couple of weeks about the effect of the Marvel studio system, shall we say, on movie making. There was Martin Scorsese with his now famous quote about...
Yeah, that boomed way higher than I thought it would. I thought it was just kind of passed by people.
No, that the Marvel movies aren't cinema. And then Jennifer Aniston came out. And she was saying that she didn't want to spend her life in front of a green screen, which was, you know, a backhanded reference to, you know, these kind of big Marvel movies.
Disney all around.
Disney all around.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an
MCU, Lucasfilm stuff, all that jazz.
Right. I think the blowback here isn't that. I think that comic book movie fans are probably a little too sensitive.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
But I think a lot of that also comes from, you know, the olden days when like a comic book movie was like Batman and Robin,
or
and
yeah, Steel, really.
Or
they're basing it off of that kind of
I think maybe there's maybe a psychological concern that, you know, we could go slide back into those days. It took comic book movies like a long time to get to this plateau, but I also think that I don't think that Scorsese or Aniston or anybody is really talking about Marvel per se, or even comic movies per se. It's about the massive, the big eyes.
You know what? Not
of
just Disney,
cinema.
I guess. Yeah. Yeah, all the X-Men. That's, you know, Sony. I guess Sony the X-Men.
Sony was Fox, but now Fox is Disney.
Okay.
All right. Disney, everything's.
But yeah, they didn't just mean Disney. They meant, you know, the Bryan Singer X-Men as well.
Well, and they mean like the DC
Men
universe, yeah, like trying to bring that in, like all that stuff that, you know, and you know, it comes down to you have a movie theater, a multiplex with like 10 screens, Avengers Endgame opens and takes like four or five screens, and then, you know, that's five screens for other movies. And, you know, what are those movies like to be? Are they like to be like small movies? Like, you know, maybe
indie ones?
Yeah, like Big Sick or You Were Never Really Here or something like that. Or is that going to be like a screen for Aladdin, a screen for Godzilla, a screen for these other things?
I think her worry, or at least Jennifer Aniston's worry, there's no in-between anymore. Like there's no blockbuster films that are just a straight up new original plot or a more kind of like depicted off like a singular book, not, you know, hundreds and hundreds of comic books. I think I like Jennifer Aniston's, and I stand by her quote for Where's Meg Ryan?
Yeah.
Right? Where's that Meg Ryan at? I think she wants more of that, like Sleepless in Seattle. Romantic films or drama films that are just a singular film. You can just sit, relax, enjoy it.
Yeah, but I mean, those are out there, but it's hard for them to get to attention. It's to a rare extent.
And you know what? Maybe not even to a rare extent, like you said. Well, I do think to a bit, but mainly, yeah, a lack of attention for sure.
Yeah, because I'm, you know, thinking about something like Long Shot, which, you know, two recognizable and talented, accomplished actors in a romantic comedy that was a little bit zany, a little bit off color at times, but, you know, ultimately, same time, very. I mean, it's not a Meg Ryan movie. Like, it's not Sleepless in Seattle. Yeah. But, I mean, it's a very adult romantic comedy.
Yeah, this is a worse example, but why him? The Bryan Cranston, James Franco.
Right.
It didn't get, like, horrendous reviews, and it wasn't like a silly, you know, Sandler or slapstick kind of film. It, you know, it had some legit romance and stuff in it. So,
Jennifer Aniston knows the Sandler oeuvre too.
Yeah.
So she has some.
Oh, I didn't say those kinds of comedies were bad then. I just mean this. Why him was more. It was like in between a Sandler and, you know, like a Meg Ryan kind of romantic drama.
It's so hard. Like, and it's like a matter of you have to have like really, really positive word of mouth, and you have to, and it's also a matter of like I'm thinking about something like The Big Sick, which managed to overcome a lot of stuff, like a lot of the
and
noise
film
and
that
Somerset.
Became made like $100 million or something good,
and we don't really pay attention to because last week the new trailer for Richard Jewell came out, which is Clint Eastwood's new movie. And it's being basically released at the same time as The Mule, which was the...
Well, people missed out on The Mule, too.
Did they? Because it made over $100 million domestically.
But we didn't hear about it, really.
No, I mean, but that's the point. It used to be your movie made over $100 million. You were golden.
Yeah.
But you would never know unless you go to Box Office Mojo and look it up that movie made its money. Yeah. And the same thing for something like The Greatest Showman, which was in the top five for weeks and made over $150 million. But nobody's talking about, those Hugh Jackman biopic musicals.
It was, I'm not going to lie. It was pretty great. I enjoyed it. Its music was...
Well, Hugh Jackman's a great showman.
Yeah.
But, you know, all the attention goes to, and I think it is, you can blame Marvel for being successful, but
Disney,
because everybody wants to pick up on what Marvel laid down. So that's how you get like the Dark Universe, and that's how you get the DC Extended Universe, and that's how you get the Fast and the Furious Universe. And
well, they
and
also
all
already, like, each Marvel film has connections to all the other Marvel films, right? So it's not just a sit down, the film's done. There's a continuation of discussion for it, right? Obviously online and stuff like that. And like all our A-lists are in those Marvel films.
Right.
So I think a lot of it is just it gets more social media attention, which is pretty huge right now.
Right,
that's why The Big Sick and such is overpassed.
Yeah, it's so hard to get that attention. And
Martin Scorsese's statement though was just wrong. Like it's not his it's not his point of view what cinema is.
Well, even Robert Downey Jr. I watched a clip of Robert Downey Jr. at Howard Stern. And it's like, you know, that's okay.
Oh, was it? I appreciate that. Okay, I like that.
And I was watching this one video. And it's one of these, you know, people, these armchair critics. Well, we're technically armchair critics, but
armchair,
I mean, it's
on cinema.
But he's talking about, you know, he made a video about like Martin Scorsese. James Cameron also says something to the effect of like, you know, can't all be about superheroes. And this person, I can't remember who it was, but he says like, oh, it's all these directors who used to be relevant. And I said, used to be irrelevant?
They're still.
Excuse me?
Very relevant.
You can't make Joker without Martin Scorsese.
Exactly.
And yeah. I don't mean because he was involved in like the inception and the production of it. I mean because he like 30, 40 years ago he made The King of Comedy and Taxi Driver.
Yeah.
So, you know, don't tell me Martin Scorsese isn't relevant. But I mean that gets into like the whole buttage of some of these.
Well,
these
I think
critics.
He's still very relevant also in the sense The Irishman got buzz like crazy. And
it's
super
on Netflix. I mean, you can't really get further from the pulse than
is it on Netflix currently?
No, but it will be.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah.
It will be.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the kind of one where it will, when it gets released, it'll get some attention.
Oh, of course. I mean,
but again, it's streaming service, right? So I don't know if Aniston would be happy with that.
Well, Aniston's on Apple TV.
Because she's given up on, you know, the cinema, the big screen. And well, yeah, she does Netflix too.
Well, she's in the Adam Sandler movie, The Mysteries, The Mystery Writer or something.
I think it's just like murder mystery.
Adam Sandler Mysteries.
or
whatever
it is. I think
it's
just murder mystery. Or that's a TV show too, isn't it?
Oh, maybe. I mean, murder mystery basically explains half the shows on TV.
Yeah. But I'm not going to lie. I thought it was okay.
I didn't see it. But I mean, she's – I think –
yeah, murder mystery.
Murder mystery? Okay. Yeah. Jennifer Aniston, it's interesting talking about Meg Ryan because for a while Jennifer Aniston was going to be the next Meg Ryan. And if you look at –
I think she was briefly or kind of was.
Well, I mean, during that period in, like, sort of the late 90s where she did, like, Picture Perfect.
Yeah.
And, like, She's the One, and I can't remember them all off the top of my head, but it's, you know, that was kind of her career trajectory
for a
while.
But then her equivalents, I guess, to, well, what's the, I just keep using Sleepless. What's another Meg Ryan, a good Meg Ryan one I could use an example?
You've Got Mail.
Okay, You've Got Mail. I think Along Came Polly was maybe an attempt to kind of maintain that sort of thing, but it didn't really bode well. So
no, it didn't bode well.
So I see what you mean. But
anyway,
I think she's better than Meg Ryan, quite frankly. So
that's a controversial opinion.
Yeah, I think she's overpassed Meg Ryan, and I don't think she should worry about being Meg Ryan. I think she should just worry about continuing to be the amazing Jennifer Aniston she is. So
well, yeah. That's a controversial opinion. We'll leave for another time. Speaking of controversy, Joker. One of the most successful movies of the year so far. It did pass $150 million.
I think it's like 200 now.
Yeah, closing in on 200. So naturally, they're talking about a sequel, even though it was supposed to be a one-off. But I saw an article on We Got This Covered, where it basically said their tipster inside Warner Brothers said the studio is seriously considering it. And Joaquin Phoenix said earlier last week that, you know, he would not be opposed. He might think about it, which is interesting because Joaquin Phoenix famously turned down parts as Doctor Strange and the Hulk because he didn't want to be in multiple movies or contracted to multiple movies.
He said he really liked the character Joker, so he'd possibly consider it. Yeah.
Yeah. Which
I'm not okay with that. I don't want that.
No, I don't want
it's Joaquin Phoenix. I love Joaquin Phoenix, and he's the kind of actor where, no, he doesn't do that. You're not working with Disney. You're not going to be in a whole huge series. You're supposed to do singular, amazing films where you represent a beautiful character.
I don't want that because I've seen The Joker. no, but it was built as, like, this bold statement. It's like, we don't have to do, like, extended universes and sequels and stuff. And then, you know, I mean, that was what Todd Phillips was selling the whole time. But, of course, you know, money talks. And it's
studio might push him.
It's
although he's got some – he's got a lot of
I mean,
of
this could be
–
I highly doubt he had, like, a multi-film option. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this would be, like, his way to, you know, do the movie equivalent of buy Alexis, you know.
Yeah.
That could very well be part of this is, like, if he sees a way that he can, you know – get a little cheddar for Joaquin, maybe. Not that he needs it, but...
Yeah, Todd Phillips would maybe do it. I really don't think Joaquin would. I think he was just kind of being polite in the interview or, you know, trying to get more hype for it.
It's interesting, too, and maybe I'll preface this by saying spoilers for Joker.
Mm-hmm.
But I was listening to a review by Bob Chipman, Movie Bob, who said, you know, he thinks that there were two scenes that the studio changed to sort of make this a bit more bankable. One of them is that a character, you don't see that character murdered. But then there's also the scene near the end of the film where it's the enactment of the Waynes being killed. number 113 of the number of times we've seen that those two people murdered on screen.
Poor Waynes.
But he said he thought that it was the original version of that was the inverse, where it was Bruce who was killed, which makes a lot more sense thematically in terms of, like, the whole idea of paying back the rich, of getting the rich back, that it would be and also given certain revelations in the movie that it would be Bruce Wayne who would be killed in that alley and not the parents.
People were hoping for that, or
no, well, the opinion of Bob Chipman was that was how the original version of that scene goes, and that it inverts the expectations.
That would be kind of cool.
Which, and when I heard him say that, I thought, you know what, thematically for this movie, that
would
make more sense.
Yeah,
but of course,
and maybe the studio is just a hope of it continuing on.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. You know, nobody wants to see a kid get killed on film, even if it's like a made up person in a fictional comic book universe. But I mean, it does strike me as that in the back of somebody's head, in the production of this was the opportunity, because there's been a lot of hype for this, like months and months out, that somebody said, you know what? there's a way we can make more money off of this. And
but they're not going to continue in it. They're not going to continue it without Joaquin.
Well, I mean, but that's it. Joaquin's left the door open.
Yeah, I guess. I don't
know. So either he, like, actually, it could be like you said, where he enjoyed playing the character and thinks there's more juice to squeeze out of that that lemon. Or it could be that, you know, he needs a new house. He wants a bigger
house. Or he's just tired of all the kind of Daniel Day-Lewis style, you know, wait 2 years for a specific role. And he just wants to, I don't know, be more part of the blockbuster.
Well, I mean, that could be, like,
I highly doubt that for him, but you never know.
Everybody hears the siren song, right? And if, you know, when the money train comes in, you have to get on, or maybe you think you have to get on. But it is disappointing that, you know, even though I didn't like the movie, I did like the statement of the movie, like, not all comic book movies have to be in the business of being a $200 million PG-13
and its
thing that sets up the next five movies that continues on into other heroes.
Yeah.
This is a one and done. This is an Elseworlds book. This is a one shot. Let's just put it out there. And if it's successful, great. And I think that if there's what they should be thinking about is not so much about direct sequel to the Joker, but like how can we tell different stories with these characters? And how can we invite directors in to just like sort of tell their story? It's like, okay, we're going to invite you in, you choose a character, you choose a story, you tell that story, and then it's over and it's done. And you know, maybe if it's successful and you want to come back for more, that's okay. But otherwise, it's perfectly okay that this concludes at the end of the credits.
Well, that's the hope for it to continue is because of Disney. Right?
Sure.
We got to listen to Aniston and Scorsese, okay? This would have been a standalone without that.
I mean, I think there's room in the world for both.
Yeah. I think
we can have our big PG-13 Batman movie that's coming from Matt Reeves and starring Robert Pattinson, but we can also have like a grittier, sort of more realistic Joker-ish movie, or a movie about, you know, I don't know, pulling DC superheroes out of my butt, you know, like
The Robert Pattinson one. I know they already said there's not going to be a connection, but
they could do they could do the Newsboy Legion. They probably won't do the Newsboy Legion, but they could. They could do Supergirl. I mean, Supergirl's on TV, but you know,
they could be on the big screen now.
They could bring Green Lantern back.
Kevin Smith directing for it again, the big screen. He's read like 10 of the episodes on TV of it.
It's, well, he's got a new healthy diet. He's got
exactly. Yeah, he does.
All right, we're going to take a quick break and then come back with Peter's top five.
Well, did you not do a top five?
No, we're doing your top five today. Okay. I'll do my top five later.
Okay.
Should have worked this out before the show. You're listening to End Credits. You're on CFRU. Told me, ring me if you need. Said I get it off the floor in case the fans did a sweep. Make the stop and change. All my niggas doing dirt can eventually stop and change. Too much hurt when you ain't got a thing. Wallet empty, but your heart feeling far from the pocket change. These young niggas need guidance from those large in the profession who never fold at the charge of possession. Karma related fears, the only stark interjection. Mama displayed the tears when God calls to rest in. Yeah, when God calls to rest in. I hope we find our rest in.
Do you want to know what it is? The Matrix is everywhere. It is all around us. Even now, in this very room, you can see it when you look out your window or when you turn on your television. You can feel it when you go to work, when you go to church, when you pay your taxes. It is the world that has been pulled over your eyes to blind you from the truth.
What truth?
That you are a slave, Neo. Like everyone else, you were born into bondage, born into a prison that you cannot smell or taste or touch. A prison for your mind. Unfortunately, no one can be told what the Matrix is. You have to see it for yourself.
And that was a clip from The Matrix. It came out in March 1999. And if you missed last week's show, it was on Tim's top five list. So we'll be interested to see if it's on Peter's top five
list. What was on his top five list?
The Matrix.
Oh, The Matrix.
The clip from the movie we just played.
No. Hey, we were listening to the music. I didn't hear the trailer. No, The Matrix is not.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Okay, so we're going to start as we did last week. You're going to give me a title and then explain why it's on your list, and then we'll keep going like that. So we'll start with your number five.
Number five would probably be EdTV.
Oh, really?
Yeah, EdTV would be number five. I love Ron Howard. I think he's a phenomenal director, and I think EdTV was the first one for him to prove, I ain't no Andy Griffith's, you know, what, grandkid or whatever he was. I ain't that kid from Andy Griffith. I ain't that Happy Days dude. I'm an amazing director. You know what I mean? Like, there's nothing immensely special about those Ron Howard films. You know, there's nothing, like, that kind of just gets shoved in your face. It's because all he cares about is making a high-quality film that you're going to focus on. You're going to stay attached to it. You're going to love those lines, love those characters. And at the end of the day, that's what matters. You know what I mean? And I think EdTV of his films does that in the best way with the beautiful Matthew McConaughey. And I also think a stepping stone for Matthew McConaughey, right, to go kind of where he currently is. Although he does dip back a bit into the rom-com after this one. But anyways, it was kind of just a singular film statement to him, like, I'm a damn good actor. You know, I apologize if you thought otherwise, but screw you, right?
Yeah.
And I also think historically important, would we have MTV's The Real World without it? You know what I mean?
I think Real World was going before.
Was it already going? Okay. Yeah. Well, then this helped.
But I mean,
this helped ignite the love for reality shows. Would Keeping Up with the Kardashians exist? You know what I mean? Would Jersey Shore, would that exist? Mm-hmm. Would that phenomenal show? The Hills, would that have existed?
Was Jersey Shore a phenomenal show?
I think Jersey Shore was something we needed. Before that, Guido's, I had only heard the Guido's term from like back in the 50s for the, you know? So it changed my mindset and viewpoint on that culture. And it made me realize that maybe New Jersey's not a place I need to ever travel to, you know?
Interesting revelations.
Yeah. So I find the film interesting in that sense, but it also shows, of course, the major negatives towards it, right? Which, if The Real World was going at that time, which I think you're right, this was 99, it must have been, people would maybe be like, okay, more understanding of, like, it's not necessarily fully good what's going on in the reality shows, and more so, it's not necessarily real. So I think it was just a beautiful depiction of it, helped ignite its popularity, but also helped make a more wide, clear point of what reality shows truly are. Mainly, though, like I said, I think it was just a solid Ron Howard film with beautiful acting, Matthew McConaughey, Woody Harrelson. I wish he'd been in it more, but a fun little, you know, one of those crappy brothers everybody's got, you know? I'm an only child, I guess I don't, but a lot of people have crappy brothers. And Ellen DeGeneres, it's always fun to see her not, you know, playing herself. And just a really, it's number five for a reason. There's nothing ridiculously special other than the reality show thing. I don't love reality show. Well, I do, but they're not necessarily a good thing. But just a solid Ron Howard film, beautiful acting from a beautiful man that I love.
Also overshadowed by The Truman Show, which came out the year before and dealt with some of the same.
The Truman Show doesn't delve into it as much because that it's such an unrealistic viewpoint of it. I would say The Truman Show is more so a metaphor for the kind of people whose parents constantly lie to them or like something like that, you know, or a religious one of people like if you're raised from the very beginning, you know, like Mormon or something like that, it's harder to change that viewpoint. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think this one was just more so like a real look at reality shows.
All right. Number four.
Number four, Man on the Moon. I am a huge Andy Kaufman fan, so I think it was well-deserved that he got a biopic. And whenever people think of Andy Kaufman, usually Taxi, right? Mm-hmm. And that's a bit of a dated role. I know he's descended from the same culture that's made fun of it, but it goes a bit too far. So I think The Man on the Moon, because it doesn't really even delve into Taxi so much, it just shows how he's just a perfect standalone comedian. Mm-hmm. He's hilarious. And kind of hilarious that we've never seen before and that I don't think we'll see to the same extent again, right?
Because
what was he doing? Was he even joking?
Yeah.
You know, it was that kind of special thing.
Right. He was Joaquin Phoenix before Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, except even more wild. But, exactly, with that, I forget the name, but that Joaquin Phoenix film was a homage to Andy Kaufman and his style of character.
Right, yeah.
Mainly why I do think it's just a great film. Jim Carrey is a phenomenal role, and he pulled in Andy Kaufman in the sense that he was in character the whole film. And there's a Netflix film about that.
Yes,
but behind it's very. It was. It made me love the film even more because it showed how much he's like Andy Kaufman. But it might change your viewpoint on Jim Carrey a bit. But yeah, his performance. He was Andy Kaufman, and he's even said that himself. And it shows off well in the film. And I'm a Danny DeVito fan by and large. I love that guy.
Yeah, they got the original Taxi people to come back and play themselves. And
so you got that nostalgia, but also you lose even the memory of Taxi while you're watching it, though. At least I did, because Danny DeVito is also just phenomenal.
Taxi is a great show.
Yeah. Oh, Taxi is a great show, too. And Andy Kaufman is of the descent that his character, they make humor towards. But there is still, I love Taxi, but I think Man in the Moon was needed to show, just how funny it was in general. I would say, though, if you don't have time for Man in the Moon, actually, I guess it might take longer to, but just literally just type in Andy Kaufman on Letterman and just different shows, and it's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But Man on the Moon gives a good sum up.
All right.
Of his importance.
Number three.
Oh, South Park, Bigger, Longer, and Uncut.
Ah, this is our first crossover. It was on Tim's list.
Was it? Okay, that makes sense. For me, mainly, it's, kind of showed that, musical comedy can work.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be some silly people dancing in the rain. There can be swearing. There can be adult, humor, Weird Al, if he wanted, he could be doing R-rated. That's what they're trying to get across, right? That's possible. Even more so, though, 1999, I think this film, its success in theaters, how well together it was, made Simpsons realize that they got some competition.
Mm.
And it helped ignite, it wasn't just The Simpsons. South Park helped ignite American Dad, Family Guy, everything like that. I know there were shows like The Critic and such before it, but there was no vulgar swearing. And none of those films made it to the big screen, which helped this, it ignite in the way I just described.
Mm-hmm.
But mainly also, that music, it's hilarious. Mm-hmm. I literally go onto YouTube and I just rewatch certain clips. And even the ones that are talked about over and over and memed and such, they're still funny. There's just, it's like their other film, Team America. It's just, it's hard to get sick of it.
Right.
Yeah. Well, but this one more important in the sense that it was needed for history and what we currently have in adult animated comedies.
Well, there would be no Team America.
Exactly.
No Book of Mormon.
Yep.
Also Stone and Parker. But yeah. I mean, Park was proof of concept.
And they wouldn't be as popular without the South Park, without the big screen.
But South Park.
Would Orgasmo exist without it? Was that already out?
I think Orgasmo was before this.
Yeah.
That and Basketball.
I think, yeah.
But
they didn't do well, whereas this did very
well. Yeah, when you start thinking about that, this went from South Park, I think, marked their transition from being pure provocateur to actually being artists and actually using that just for something to say. Not that they weren't artists before, but I think you can make a very strong argument that Basketball isn't art.
Mm-hmm.
But but it is a point for them where they do take that divergence where they do drive South Park more into the commentary.
This isn't just basic adult humor where the jokes are the swears. We have some importance to what we're writing.
And if you don't get South Park, they don't get the clout to make something like Team America or to go to Broadway and do Book of Mormon.
Mm-hmm.
And
it really helped lead to the continuation of making fun of Canadians, which I love. Because that's a major part of it. And
right.
I'm very happy with their continuation of that.
Yeah, the whole Terrence and Phillips. But what's interesting, though, is that I'm thinking back about this and thinking about when Tim mentioned it last week, it's the controversy of it and the swears and the kids.
Yeah.
And you said, it made The Simpsons realize it had more competition. But I remember too, because I'm old enough to remember when The Simpsons came on and, you had the president of the United States at the time, George H.W. Bush, going on TV and saying we need the American families to be more like the Cleavers, Leave It to Beaver, and less like The Simpsons. Like this, it was like Simpsons was made in the pit of hell by Devil doing all the animation himself. Mm-hmm. And even South Park is like tame now.
Oh yeah,
it's made that transfer. Mm-hmm. It's like from being a cultural agitator to being like just, you know,
or like The Simpsons then from 14 plus to 18 plus.
Yeah,
they said no, we're gonna go full drive on this. Yeah. You know. Yeah, so important that's, and just like funny. Yeah.
It is funny. That's the important part.
It's hilarious.
Number two
would be American Pie.
Oh, okay.
American Pie is a beautiful masterpiece.
Without American Pie,
I think it is a masterpiece. I think it's a perfect representation of your final year of high school, of puberty, of your first loves, of all that stuff. It's very important. And mainly, American Pie 1999 set a stepping stone for some amazing comedies coming for us through Jason Biggs and Sean William Scott. And not even just, you know.
Amazing?
Yes, amazing for me.
All right.
I don't know about critically amazing, but when it comes to enjoyment, yes, most definitely. Those films in general, because this was so popular. This made like 100 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it helped to ignite the slacker films of the 2000s, the sex comedies of the 2000s, mm-hmm. and just the, you know. Yeah, sex comedy, slapstick, and just the slacker vibes, you know? Kevin Smith helped with that, but mm-hmm. I think American Pie helped ignite it to the extent of all teens to love and enjoy. And mainly for me, it made Jason Biggs big. Sean William Scott already had some stuff, but Jason Biggs, boom. So I got Loser, yes. I think Loser is a phenomenal film. Mr. X, yes. I think it's a phenomenal film.
Okay.
Saving Silverman, yes, I think that's a phenomenal film. I think all these films are needed
for
people my age. I think there's a lot of millennials that would agree with me. These films were needed in the troubling times of Iraq.
And, they got you through 9/11.
And 9/11 and stuff. We just needed some chill time, some bromance, some stuff like that, man. You know what I'm saying, dude?
I think
we needed it.
I think...
And I still watch them, and they still have some humor to me. And it also helped maintain Eugene Levy, a Canadian hero.
Yes.
I guess Adam Donaldson is not a fan of Eugene Levy.
That's
but,
fair.
Yeah, he's phenomenal in it.
I'm an SCTV nerd. but, I mean, you may be right. This may be mm-hmm. the underappreciated masterpiece of 1999, because then you go into 2000, and... Like, they all kind of, like, go off and do their own thing.
Even ones,
and it's
like, not attached to it with the characters. Like,
right.
Todd Phillips, like, Road Trip, stuff like that. It just helped make that kind of feeling popular.
Right, and not all those movies were... It's kind of like the whole YA boom of, like 10 years ago, where people saw, oh, like, Harry Potter's successful and Twilight's successful. We'll just take any book and we'll turn it into a successful movie.
And these films, for me, I think what's important... These kinds of films in American Pie, they came out while I was growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it helped me learn, you know, what to expect when I'm a teen or when I'm a preteen, how to deal with being a preteen, because a lot of these came out when I was a wild preteen.
Mm-hmm.
I think for millennials, these films were needed. I think at least needed for you to be in a good sense of a comedy or maybe an optimistic viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It could be, and you know, it's hard to argue that, you know, I think the ensemble is what makes that work.
Yep.
That, you know, when you have Jason Biggs and who else is in that? Chris Klein,
mm-hmm.
Eugene Levy, like you said, mm-hmm. Mina Suvari, Shannon Elizabeth, Allison Hannigan.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
You know,
How I Met Your Mother exist without American Pie? I don't know without Allison Hannigan.
She was already on Buffy at the time.
Yeah, you're right.
Allison Hannigan was going to be fine.
This made her become more famous as like a solo actor instead of just a side character.
All right, good. Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, that brings us to your number one.
My number one is, of course, Big Daddy.
Oh, my God.
Big Daddy. No, here's the thing. Because Big Daddy... Done by Dennis Duggan, some classics, Happy Gilmore, right? It was the first one that wasn't fully in your face. It was almost a dramedy. It was just a beautiful look at someone dealing with the kid, you know? And he wasn't a father-son, but the whole film's theme was a father and son one, you know? There was no ridiculous slapstick. There was no wild, you know, people with an eye patch teaching you how to break glass with a golf ball and such. Like, you know, it was just a fun time. Father-son. I think it was a good father-son film. And the Sprouses, you know, it helped them sprout. Mm-hmm. Sprout. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They were already in Friends, I guess. But actually, no, I think they were. Wait, you know what season they came around in Friends? Either way, they weren't. They were Big Daddy's what made them like A-list.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I also want to say, I do think it's a stepping stone for Adam Sandler, for Happy Madison, in the sense that it's the first dramedy. Mainly for me, because we're doing favorites, right? We're not mm-hmm. doing best. Mm-hmm. I watched this constantly with my grandpa, and I loved him. And it was one of my favorites growing up. So I had to pick Big Daddy for this. Yeah. Before we end, I want to say, because this was one of the hardest years. I think, did we do 98 last year? It wasn't as hard.
No, we did horror movies this time last year.
Okay, yeah, that's probably why it wasn't so great for me. So there's a few that I love, and a few of them I do think are of a higher quality of films than American Pie and Big Daddy. I'm not, mm-hmm. like, I defended them. I do stand by it. I love them, but I'm a movie reviewer. I'm aware there's some negative qualities to them, so I want to say... Dogma was a possibility for me.
Sure, yeah.
I just don't think it was special in any Kevin Smith sense. Like, he'd already kind of mall rats, and he'd already helped, you know, ignite the whole slacker thing.
I can make a counter argument, but I'll save it.
Oh, well, here's the thing. The whole religious thing, too. My granny's, like, I'm not religious, but I don't know. My granny was really, really Catholic, so I don't, I just, it did, when I watched it as a kid, it's, offensiveness towards Christianity offended me.
Okay.
I feel bad. I'm not Christian, but... so Dogma, Bowfinger.
Okay.
I think it was amazing. Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy. That's all okay. I need. There's a reason I didn't put it. I couldn't think of a justifiable reason for it. Stuart Little.
I can think of one.
Stuart
okay.
Little.
Yep.
And Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo. It's phenomenal.
No comment. Let's go to the music, and we're going to come back with a review.
Sorry. Though there's the one last important one.
All right.
There's going to be people like, oh, you say like Paul Thomas Anderson.
I hope this is good.
I didn't pick Magnolia. All
right.
Because Magnolia's ending sucks.
Okay.
The buildup in the film, every little story they say is cool, is really cool, and then the frog thing is stupid. So, yeah, I've seen Magnolia. It's a great film. Philip Seymour Hoffman, it's one of my favorite roles of his. But I didn't pick it because the ending is stupid.
All right.
So if you make Magnolia and you're listening, that's stupid. You're stupid.
All right. Well, we'll wait for the tweets for that one. We're going to come back with our review of Gemini Man. You're listening to End Credits here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca. Well, campus and community radio. Me, babe, that someday these will be the good old days. All the love you won't forget. And all these reckless nights you won't regret. Cause someday soon your whole life's gonna change. You'll miss the magic of the good old days. Wish I didn't think I had the answers. Wish I didn't drink all of that glass first. Wish I made it to homecoming. Got up the courage to ask her. Wish I would've gotten out of my show. Wish I put the bottle back on that shelf. Wish I wouldn't have worried about whatever people want.
Stop right there! Who are you? I don't want to shoot you!
Fine. Don't shoot me. Mind if I shoot you?
Did they show you a picture of me?
Yeah, you look old.
Kid, you take one step closer. You're gonna leave me no choice.
And that was a clip from Gemini Man, and is the new film from Ang Lee, and it stars Will Smith, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Benedict Wong, and Clive Owen. it's one of these movies that's sort of been kicking around Hollywood forever. It was, I think it was written in the 90s initially.
By Ang Lee?
Not by Ang Lee. It was like a script written on spec or something, but boy, does it show. Mm-hmm. This is such a 90s action movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it wasn't very good. I did not enjoy it.
Oh, you didn't? I enjoyed it. But it was such a 90s action movie. It was like
Yeah, I've seen worse films, but it's...
Wow, what a ringing endorsement.
I'm not endorsing Gemini Man.
How did you see it? Did you see it in the like regular 3D, or did you see the high frame rate 3D?
I saw the high frame rate one.
Okay, so did I.
AVX or whatever?
The Pergola Cineplex. Yeah, that is the way to see this because it's like...
You have to.
Because it was shot 4K 3D, 120 FPS.
Yes.
And for people who aren't technical, typical movies are 24 FPS. Mm-hmm. So it's like five times the FPS.
But it's a noticeable difference.
If you
watch like the trailer on just your regular computer, it's going to look even better on the big screen. It's kind of like Alita Battle Angel. Like, you got to realize how beautiful it is. You have to see it in the big screen.
It's wonderful to look at.
It is. It was. That's the one thing. Like, no, it wasn't great. But, like, there's worse. And, yes, my first note is the visuals were outstanding.
Mm-hmm.
Was it set in the future? It seemed to be kind of set in the future. Just the present?
Today, yeah.
Either way, whatever landscapes they used were gorgeous. Yeah. There was the one where Will Smith and the love interest. It's like, it's sort of love interest, whatever.
Yeah, I have some comments about but go on.
Early in the beginning, I forget where they are, but they're just sitting, and there's just a huge just landscape of water behind them and like, white sand, and it's just gorgeous.
Was that when they were in Cartagena?
Yeah. And the market area of there too is just gorgeous. The little red and green roofs and everything, and the color contrast through that big screen.
There's such a like a vibrant quality to it, and you notice it too in the action sequences.
You do,
especially the one on the dirt bike, where they're tracing through Cartagena on dirt bikes, and everything's just so crisp, and you can almost feel it. It's almost too real at times.
Well, and the cinematography, it's not just beautiful; like, they're well done too. I don't know who the cinematography guy is. I don't think Ang Lee usually does his own, but
no,
they seem to be a huge fan of what is it? Is it the Dutch shot?
Right. Or,
yes.
Dutch
little,
angles.
Yeah, Dutch angles. A little tilt. And I am a huge fan of that. So that was great. It was maybe overdone a bit, but it was done right, and it was cool.
Dion Beebe is the cinematographer. Well,
Dion Beebe, awesome name, first off.
He's done...
Secondly, he did a damn good job.
he did Edge of Tomorrow.
When it comes to the visuals, that was really good.
And he did, he's actually done a lot. He's done Mary Poppins Returns.
Wow.
He did Green Lantern.
Okay, wow.
And he also did Memoirs of a Geisha, which is also another one of those movies that was like making the rounds in Hollywood forever. But I mean,
The one train shot too is a panoramic shot. It was like a full kind of
the fisheye.
Fisheye. That was beautiful.
Yeah, this is such a beautiful movie, which makes me so much effort was placed on like, we're gonna shoot this in the best way possible, with the best camera possible, and the best lighting and all that, and it was nice that it's like a rare 3D movie where the dark scenes, you can see stuff going on, and it doesn't feel smudgy, and it keeps you so alert, like just the style of the images. And,
yeah, but and that was needed visceral for feels. Alertness. You know what I mean?
Yes, because I mean, I don't like David Benioff, who co-created Game of Thrones and Billy Ray.
Lost with David Benioff, isn't that?
You're thinking of Damon Lindelof.
Yeah, I am. Disgusting, Peter.
Take it easy. But no, so there was an update to the script at some point, even though the guy who wrote the original script still gets screenplay credit on it.
Yeah.
But it feels like they didn't really update it at all because
the dialogue is...
The dialogue is
straight
bad.
Up like action film from that era.
It feels like we still have like insecurities about Dolly the sheep.
Yeah,
and
no, it had the dialogue equivalent to the like Geostorm, the one we reviewed. And
oh
like,
my god, Geostorm!
Yeah,
now on Netflix.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's
the one cilantro line. It was like a cilantro joke.
Yeah, there's a
that like, was really stupid.
Why are we harping?
It's
because
it's. I think it was like just recently added in because it's like a current new like Reddit like meme thing, but like. Common meme-y comment about like how awful cilantro is, and it's because there's like 1 in 7 people are born with some like DNA that makes it so you just hate cilantro. And it's,
this is like the thing about candy corn. All of a sudden, everybody hates candy corn.
Yeah,
and
it becomes
I don't know
a big thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's moving on.
Yeah,
but the
but this is an example of how quickly they just quickly they wrote it. Period. Or how they didn't write it and just kept it the way it was. And would you, the 80s, 90s, whatever?
The 90s, like the late 90s. And I mean, this is what I'm thinking of is like, because, you know, we've had action movies like Mission Impossible, mm-hmm. like the last two Mission Impossible movies.
Well, and you said the motorcycle, right?
Yeah.
Like, we already had an amazing one of that, Mission Impossible.
And there's like the John Wick series. Like if you're talking about like the pinnacle of like what action movies are capable of, that's probably your guiding star in the year 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like the guiding star of this was like pre-Matrix. It was like the works of like Simon West and of like Michael Bay, mm-hmm. like in terms of like The Rock. And it, you know, it's all the action scenes feel so cloistered. It feels like, and you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing to have sort of everything be, you know, more intimate and more impactful and close quarters combat. But I mean, it just feels like there's no ambition to this at all, other than the, you know, we have two Will Smiths. Having said that, I think this is probably the best use of like de-aging technology in terms of like having two actors.
Yes.
But I think a lot of that has to do with one, they do a lot to cover up young Will Smith most mm-hmm. of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a spoiler that there's a young Will Smith because it's like right there in the freaking trailer.
Yeah, the poster.
But, yeah. Like he's wearing sunglasses in that one scene we played. Another scene he's like wearing like night vision goggles and a gas mask. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And then there's a big fight scene in like a dark catacomb. And it's like so much of this movie is like, okay, you get it. He's young Will Smith. Okay, now we're not going to, you know, we're not going to like burn your eyes with the like the uncanny valley of it, like something like say Tron Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really smart.
Oh yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it compares to The Irishman when it comes out.
Yeah, I mean that's.
But Irishman again will be on Netflix, so it'll be like I know some people have you know a 8K OLED with you know that frame rate and stuff, but like if you just have even like just a regular 4K 60 frames, it's not going to look the same as in the big screen.
No,
you know.
No, and I think this is like.
So yes, I agree that the aging was done phenomenally in this as well. In the trailers on YouTube, I noticed sometimes when the young one turns his head, it doesn't look perfect. But when you see it in the big screen, it's
and
it's
at the
totally
end when
fine.
They're like out in the sunshine.
Oh
it's definitely noticeable.
Yeah, that's one scene I don't think was needed. That was just
the end was so 90s.
Oh yes, it was like the end of a Hallmark film where that kid who finally made it to college like had cancer when
he
beat cancer and he's going to college. That's what I was thinking of the whole ending scene.
I do want to get back to the love interest thing because it's. First of all, I like the fact that Mary Elizabeth Winstead isn't like a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
That she's like, she can kick butt too.
Yeah. And she was in more than I thought based on the trailer. Like she, I don't know if she had, I'll tell you what, she had more lines than what Margot Robbie and Once Upon a Time and such. But I think she could have had more, but she was still, I think, more. She was more in it than you would expect from an action film.
Yeah, she wasn't quite a co-star like in terms of equal billing, but I mean she was more of a co-star than that. But I mean the film is like seems uncertain about how much they want to play the romantic angle between her and Will Smith, and it's like, you know, are they flirting? Are they not flirting? Does he like respect her skills? And like maybe that comes across as like sort of like non-romantic kind of, you know, buddy flirting.
And even by the end it's not.
That's not
fully
yeah.
confirmed.
Right.
Although they're with each
And it's like somewhere somebody was, I think, had a concern because one of the big criticisms of the 90s with movies was having older leading men with much younger leading women. So if you think about Up Close and Personal with Robert Redford and Michelle Pfeiffer, or 6 Days, Seven Nights with Harrison Ford and Anne Heche, it was like very, very noticeable that these let's just say grandpas are being teamed with like women who were old enough to be their granddaughters.
Yeah.
And
what were your thoughts on that? Because he's like 52.
Yeah, and I mean, it's
she's
not,
a grad student.
She says she's a grad student. And Mary Elizabeth Winstead in real life is like 33, 34.
Yeah.
So I mean, the age difference isn't
as bad as
Harrison Ford and Anne Heche in 1997 or whenever that was. But I mean, it's still like really noticeable, like when he's like.
The age difference, yeah. If it was written currently, she'd definitely be like a few years older.
Right, and
just lie and give Will Smith's character.
But I mean,
like
they don't really go one way or the other. And I think that there was maybe some sort of like meta awareness, like, you know, with Me Too and everything going on. It's like, this might be kind of icky.
Yeah,
and it's so they don't really commit to either one. And if they just like made it so that like she was like his partner in this. Or if she was like the romantic and they like just go there at the end, it's like, you know what, we've been through this terribly traumatic experience together, let's hook up or something, like just pick one and be done with it. But I mean, that's another very 90s thing that's left over in the screenplay that Ang Lee didn't care or, you know, just didn't bother trying
I was a bit disappointed in that because I really love Ang Lee.
I'm not disappointed in this by any stretch. I just think it lacks ambition.
I wish it had at least
in terms of storytelling. The technical ambition is terrific.
And he's always been great at that, and he's further proved that. It's like Life and Pi. It's gorgeous.
It's a beautiful film. I just wish that somebody wrote a screenplay that sounded like it was written in the 20s.
Yeah, it's too bad because I love Will Smith too. But like you were saying, we're saying it's too bad. There was a lot of positive qualities to it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I would say what it has on Rotten Tomatoes and stuff is like 23. That is definitely too low. Like
that
if
is
you're,
too low.
If it's, you're an action fan, see it.
But it's a solid
make sure you
matinee
see it in the big screen.
Yeah, it's a solid matinee.
That's per description. It's,
you know, you don't want to spend all like $14 to see it. But if you're gonna go on like a weekend afternoon, it's perfectly enjoyable.
Yeah. I would say when it comes to other action films, it's like on par quality wise to The Day After Tomorrow. Or would you say Day After Tomorrow is more of a like better dialogue and such?
No, I wouldn't say it's
good. Yeah, there you go. So I'd say it's like that. It's bad dialogue, but still.
But I mean, in terms of like having good. Like plot holes you can drive a truck through and you know, it has like movies that have sort of like a vague idea of what they're trying to say and where they're going, but don't necessarily have the depth of skill or the right screenplay to be able to say it properly. Yeah, because I mean, there's so much of this that's sort of left unsaid about, you know, why Clive Owen is, you know, cloning people.
We haven't even mentioned Clive
I know.
Owen once.
Right, but it's like, it's left up, like, why is he cloning people? Why does he have, like, why does he run Blackwater?
Yeah, you don't learn anything about
what is
him.
His relationship to Will Smith? Because they don't even come face-to-face until, like, the last scene.
No, yeah, that was, and it's too bad because Clive Owen's not really in much anymore, so it was good to see him in something.
Except
but yeah,
for commercials.
Such a minor role.
Except for commercials about, like,
everyone's doing that,
about, like, you know, ramping up your business or something. I don't really pay it. This is the thing. I've seen those commercials. I have no idea what they're for.
Yeah, DeVito. I don't know what Danny DeVito's are for either.
That one I know. Is explicit that like it's for like FreshBooks or some or a service like
not
FreshBooks.
Explicit enough. I don't know what it
but,
was.
But the Clive Owen ones, no idea.
Yeah, no, they're awful. He's not bad in this. It's just, there's nothing you learn about his character. Like, there's not enough for you to be able to care about his character.
No, I don't like no.
Unless you know it's Clive Owen, like there's part of me that's like, hey, Clive Owen, that's cool. But
and there's this scene where the clone finds out he's a clone and he confronts Clive Owen, who's like he thinks is his father. And it's like it's got this like wonderful sort of like Will Smith's like acting his butt off in that scene, and Clive Owen's just like, I'm Clive Owen, and
he's
I
just
do
grunting
it.
And stuff. Yeah,
yeah, it's like there's you really get nothing of it, and you have Will Smith doing a lot in the scene, and Clive Owen's giving him nothing. I think that again, that's a fault of the screenplay.
Yeah,
he's the bad guy, and you're just supposed to hate him. Mm-hmm.
That is a good example, though, for like Will Smith. There is a few parts where a great acting performance. Well, no, sorry, he's a great actor the whole thing, but I mean, like there's actually some okay dialogue lines.
Well, I mean,
in his point of view,
this taps
for his
into
character.
like classic Will Smith classic, like 90s yeah. brand Will Smith.
Or
like
I was thinking charisma. iRobot, and you know, yeah. something like that.
Like, I mean, that era Will Smith where he was like, you know, king of 4th of July and all mm-hmm. that. You know, so there is value in that too, because I think Will Smith's like trying to sort of like find himself again by revisiting sort of like past, you know, when you see him in Aladdin, when you see him in this.
Yeah, I don't know, because he's not having a midlife crisis because he's doing like really good. But I think he's having trouble deciding which path will be the singular one he continues to follow along with.
Because
he's doing this, he's doing Aladdin, like you said, and then also the whole Instagram and YouTube stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, he's
all over the place.
Yeah, he's having a moment. I don't know what the moment is, but we'll have to wait and see.
We'll find out.
Yeah, we will find out. Yes.
There was not really any
You're
other.
The master of final thoughts.
There was not
this
really
week.
Any other. I needed to mention that Magnolia thing. Like, I just don't want people to think that, like, I've only seen Big Daddy and American Pie. Like, I've seen the other critically acclaimed ones, too. I wanted to make people know that my point of view was objective, not subjective. It was Clive Owen, Will Smith, you know, the female counterpart. What was that name of the actress?
Mary Elizabeth
Winstead. Yeah, she was great in it. That was about it. And there was that one other dude, but he didn't really have much dialogue. And there was there was nothing about him that was lovable. And yeah,
he was the Rick and the TC.
Yeah, there was a lack of characters too, which I thought was strange.
Yeah. Oh well.
Yeah, and all the villains just didn't have any personality or anything, right?
No.
Oh,
that's. But we'll leave that there. You're loved, Peter. Don't worry about it. Nobody will hold Magnolia against you, at least after next week. That's it for this week's show. We hope you liked it. If you want to listen to it again, you can find it on our website, endcreditsradioshow.com. Download it from the Guelph Politicast channel every Friday on Podbean or through your favorite podcast app at iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Find us on social media at Facebook, End Credits Radio Show, or on Twitter at End Credits Radio. And Peter, where can people find you to rage about your distaste for Magnolia?
As per usual, Mr. Tarak. YouTube, Twitter. Also, I want to say, Inherent Vice, phenomenal film.
All right.
Check out Inherent Vice.
All right. There's no end to the controversial opinions, but I'll be back on CFRU tomorrow at 5 p.m. for news and politics on Open Sources Guelph with Scotty Hertz. In the meantime, find me on Twitter and Instagram at Adam A. Donaldson or go to GuelphPolitico.ca and stay tuned for more great programming here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We'll be back next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for more end credits, and we'll see you then.